Hello, everybody. Welcome. I don't think you wanted to hear two of me. I didn't realize I was already, I thought I was already in and it would tell me if I was, but it didn't tell me. It just let me in twice. How weird. Anyway, hi, welcome. I'm excited to be here for our INE office hours calls. Welcome to the new folks. A lot of you are new with CMDS. And I'm excited to get to know you and meet you. So hopefully, even if you don't have a real question, you can at least say hi on the call. If you're on the live phone call, you can do star two, and that will raise your hand. And first of all, do star two right now so I know that everybody hears me. Star two, yay. Thank you. So Kilo from Honolulu, woohoo. Jay Whitman from Montreal, cell phone Colorado. Great. Thank you for letting me know. I'll put your hands down. Super. We also have a chat going. So if you go over to chat, I'm signing into chat right now so I could see. There's a chat, so you can say hello. Janet said hi. Hi, Janet. There's also a Q&A, and I'll just distinguish between the chat and the Q&A. The chat is live interaction between everybody that's here, and we can have conversations, and Lynn's really awesome about finding links or, you know, supporting people on that. The Q&A is just a one-way street, so only I see it. So if you have a question that you want answered, it's usually safest to put it in the Q&A because with the chat, if a lot of people are talking, it just goes by so fast that I miss some of the calls, the questions. But you're welcome to do it either way, whichever works. But the Q&A works better for getting me the questions. So we have three choices, chat, Q&A, or live. I love to hear your voices, especially if it's your first time on a call like this, get to know you. I'll just explain a little bit about how these calls work, and then I'll go ahead and start the recording. So Lynn said there's six questions in the Q&A. Perfect. Yeah, so the Q&A is set up so that you can send me your questions before the call. So when you click to you get the reminder, you click it, and you can put your questions in. And I usually like to do those questions first at the beginning of each call. That way, if you've put a question in, you don't have to go through the entire question and answer, you know, hour and a half or hour, whatever it turns out to be. But it's actually helpful if you do because you learn a lot from other people's questions. But it, to make it easier for people, I try to do the questions that came in before the call right at the beginning. Then we open it up for interactions, and then we sometimes go back and forth between typed in questions and people raising their hands. Anything goes, really. Most of you are in CMDS or NEPT, and NEPT includes CMDS. NEPT is Nutritional Endocrinology Practitioner Training, and that includes CMDS. That's the digestive program. It includes IRSPT, the insulin resistance, and it includes 34 other modules on thyroid and adrenals and blood chemistry software and all kinds of things. So those of you in NEPT know what I'm talking about. Those of you who are new to CMDS, welcome. And then we can also have people from IRSPT in here. Usually the bulk of people on these calls, if we're running a live program like we are right now with CMDS, then the bulk of the people and the questions tend to be digestive, but know that some of the questions on these calls may not be related to digestion, and it just expands your reach and your knowledge base. Like sometimes people bring on a lab test, like a Dutch test or a genetics test or blood sugar type testing. So you're going to learn a lot on these calls. Whether or not you have a question, it's a good idea to come to these calls because there's just a wealth of information. And sometimes it's a question you haven't thought of asking yet, but it sounds like a good question. And perhaps a module down the road, a video down the road, you're going, oh, that's a great question. I'm glad I got that answered. So I'm going to go ahead and start the recording. And then what I'd love, if you are new, and even if you don't have a question, just raise your hand to say, hi, I'm new and I'm in this program. Most likely it's for CMDS because that's the one we've just recently launched again. So I'm going to go ahead and start our recording. Hello and welcome to our office hours, our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology office hours for the month of September 2017. I'm excited to have you all here. And let's just get started. So hands raised, star two will You can use that to introduce yourself, or you can use that to ask a question or make a comment, however you want to do it. And then chat, you can go ahead and type in, and I'm going to go to Q&A to start because a bunch of people I've been told had asked questions in advance. And basically anything goes. So Natalia from Bogota. I'm not sure where Bogota is. Natalia has a couple of questions. How can we define if we are sensitive to a certain food by the increase in blood glucose? What if it's a carb that has a high glycemic impact? How can that we make the difference? Is it normal glycemic response or if it's a reaction? That's a great question. And generally speaking, we use the blood sugar to determine how sensitive we are to the carbohydrate content of that food and how that food affects our body and makes the sugar go up. If we're having a sympathetic response to anything, meaning, you know, we're causing the release of adrenaline and cortisol, that can cause the blood sugar to go up. So if a food is stressful to the body and is causing an immune reaction, it's conceivable that that could cause the blood glucose to go up. The way you could do, there's no just absolute way to differentiate. The way you can differentiate is if you eat celery, which is an extreme low glycemic index, no sugar in it, and your blood sugar goes up by, you know, more than 20 points, then it could be that your body's reacting to something in the celery. It doesn't mean it's necessarily an allergy, but it could be a constituent in there, a specific chemical in there, sensitivity to histamines or other things. So there's no definitive way, but when you get a really weird reaction, you eat a banana, your blood sugar goes up, you expect it, right? You eat a candy bar, you eat grains, blood sugar goes up, you just know that you're sensitive to the carb in there. But if you eat lettuce or celery, carrots are on the border, it could go up because there's more sugar in carrots, then, you know, it's possible that that's what's going on. Natalia, is flaxseed oil safe to use? I've read it becomes rancid easily. It does become rancid very easily, and you've got to really trust your brands. You only want to use flaxseed oil that's in a dark container that's been refrigerated when you purchased it and from a reputable brand. I use Barlean's and I use Omega Nutrition, and they date it. So they'll put a date on the label. And if you buy flaxseed, like today's September 7th, if you buy flaxseed and it's dated that it was pressed in July or even early August, it may already be rancid. It depends on where you're buying it. If you're buying it from the store, it was shipped to that store. It's been sitting on the shelf for a while. So really, flaxseed is good for about 2 months, two, maybe 3 months post-pressing. So if the date is out there and it's more than that, or close to that, it could possibly be problematic. Depends on how they've stored it. So if it was in a refrigerated compartment the whole time, no problems. When we purchase it directly from Barlean's. They ship it to us, and they ship it to us chilled, and the dates are, like, they press it the day they ship it. So we'll get the stuff, and it's, like, you know, 3 days old, which so you know that. So, yeah, you got to be careful with it. Hi Ermila from San Francisco. I'm a huge fan of yours. Thank you, and excited to be in one of your programs. I was wondering if you had any experience or suggestions for helping people with vitiligo. Thank you so much. Yeah, so here's the thing that I always look at. I always like to look at what is the underlying cause or the mechanism of action in a particular disease. So vitiligo, I believe, is an autoimmune disease, and I could really quickly look it up and just say, oh, is vitiligo an autoimmune disease? So that's my thought process. That's how I would go through it. So if vitiligo is an autoimmune disease, loss of color, right? But is it vitiligo autoimmune? So they're saying vitiligo may be an autoimmune, right? Yes. So if anything that's an autoimmune disease, you start with the gut. You've got to get the leaky gut cleared. You've got to get the stresses out of the body, right? So it could be heavy metals. It could be dental fillings. It could be exposures to chemicals in the household. It could be just mental, emotional stress. It could be particular food stresses, allergies, et cetera. So I would always go backwards rather than treating a disease, I want to treat the person. I want to look at what are the underlying causes, what are the stressors in that person's life, what food stresses, what environmental stresses, what mental emotional stresses, what other kind of conditions are going on, do they have a microbiome disruption, and then we go from there. And that's the way I would approach it. And I've had good results. I've worked with people who had vitiligo who have gone on, you know, gluten-free diet and cleaned up their gut and, you know, done all these things to increase their micronutrient status and done really well. I'm not sure I can pronounce your name, Agnieszka from Poland. Agnieszka. Something like that. You can correct me if you're on the phone. You're probably not. You're probably sleeping because it's middle of the night or something. Although 2 years of eating clean food, healthy lifestyle, and many biomedical interventions, my whole family is struggling with multiple health issues. IBS, dysbiosis, food sensitivities, autoimmune, ADHD, recurrent edema, adrenal fatigue, brain fog, and more. I suspect mold. If it's your entire family, I was just thinking, oh my God, mold in the household. So cleaning the house. Could you give me any suggestions on restoring gut health in this situation? Well, you know, addressing, of course, the mold, you may have to move. I mean, the really sad truth is you may have to move. The mold can get into your furniture, into your clothing, anything cloth where it can build up on. And I've known people who have had to move and get rid of everything that was, you know, not vinyl or, you know, plastic or metal or something that could be cleaned. So that's the situation, is getting out of the situation. If there's any way to temporarily, you know, get out for a while you're figuring this out. But going back to the gut, you know, it's really starting from the top, and it's really looking at what pieces of the gut are disrupted. Like certainly the gut eating hygiene, which we all have to do and most of us don't, you know, which is the getting into a relaxed state and really creating a ritual around eating to help to get the most out of it. And, you know, with a 2-year-old, getting them to sit still for any length of time is hard. But if you create that as a family ritual that everybody sits down and you take some breaths, you maybe light some candles. We used to do that with our kids when they were little. We'd light candles before dinner. We'd do gratitudes, things like that. But then really looking at where the disruption is, a lot of times it's in the microbiome, right? So you've got to look at what kind of things are there. But I would go through the CMDS protocol step by step by step with each piece. You can't obviously get a 2-year-old to do symptom survey, but you can certainly get a 2-year-old, you know, like, is he having diarrhea? Is he having constipation? How does he handle certain foods? I would get him on lots of high green leafy vegetables. So juicing could be really helpful. Depends on what kind, if it's IBS, you know, you cleaning up that diet, doing that, the rotation diet, and getting rid of all of the food sensitivities, the likely ones in anything you've just determined, making sure that you're eating the probiotic containing foods if they're tolerated, and reversing all of this stuff. So you really need to start with getting that gut cleaned out and getting the food really, and maybe pared down to doing an elimination diet of just 5 or 6 foods. But seriously, if that's what you're, if there's mold there, and if it's the whole family and you've been dealing with lots of issues, then you definitely need to address the gut from top to bottom, the way we teach it in CMDS. Tammy, a 59-year-old female, antiparietal cell antibody titer, is elevated, parietal cell antibody screen positive. What is this in? Oh, negative is normal, right? Okay. On the lab test, right? So vitamin B12 is 17, 18, H. pylori in the past got tested negative by BioHealth for H. pylori, peptic ulcer in the past, clean dairy, gluten, dairy-free diet. What's the solution for this antibody to be in remission? Yeah, so parietal cells, it's in the stomach, obviously, and when the parietal cells are affected, you're going to affect the production of hydrochloric acid in the stomach. You're going to can impact the intrinsic factor. The B12 is high, so it's probably getting absorbed. It may not be getting utilized in the cell, because elevated B12 oftentimes means that it's not being converted to usable B12, methyl B12, and hydroxy and getting into the cells. But in terms of what to do, you've got to do all the autoimmune type things. And we teach that in our thyroid class because we teach about Hashimoto's, but there's a step-by-step process. You've got to make sure that clean diet, yeah, gluten-free is great, dairy-free is great. Make sure that there aren't any other food allergies. You want to remove all those. You've got to heal the leaky gut, which means you have to look for other organisms, right? So the biohealth tests for certain numbers of organisms, certain bacteria, certain parasites. It may not be a comprehensive test, so you may want to actually run as a follow-up the doctor's data comprehensive stool test. But you really want to go through the process of what? How do you calm down the immune system? Because yes, this is a digestive issue, but it's also an immune issue because the immune system is creating antibodies to attack. So you've got to look at leaky gut, possibility of heavy metals, and other stressors, whatever the other stressors are in her life. It could be a viral, it could be a hidden viral infection, it could be a hidden bacterial infection deep within the gut. So it's just basically autoimmune, autoimmune, autoimmune. Tammy. Oh, and antioxidants, super important. I use a fair amount of OxyCell by Apex Energetics for people with autoimmune because it's a topical and it has glutathione and SOD and catalase and other really good antioxidants. That could be super important. And I would look at high dose vitamin C, whatever bowel tolerance will allow. And then, of course, you know, you've got to look at, you know, potentially seeing how that you're doing, but I would potentially look at HCL supplementation as well. Go slow, do the HCL challenge. Okay. Tammy, glucose 98, 89 to 102 in the last 5 years. And I can't tell, Tammy, if you're in. One of the things I'd love you guys to do when you put in questions is to tell me what program you're in, because then I can tell you where to, like, find resources to get your answers. So, Tammy, if you're in IRSBT, then CMDS will have a lot of your answers for getting that gut cleared up and reversing autoimmune stuff. Glucose 98, it had been 89 to 102 the last 5 years, so it's elevated. Insulin is 4.4, so it's a, you know, it's a little bit, I like it at 3, but 4.4 is okay. A1C is 5.8, and I really want to see that in the low 5s or 5, so that's like an average. 5.8 is probably an average of 120, which is high, so she's probably going to have spikes happening after eating. Triglycerides 49, HDL is 97. I'm suspicious of fat malabsorption with a 49 on triglycerides, especially with numbers that indicate insulin resistance, because we usually see elevated triglycerides when a person is insulin resistant. LDL is high, so it's at 110. Is she pre-diabetic? Yeah, so she is not diabetic, but I would say she's pre-diabetic. She's on the border of where they would put her as far as saying she's insulin resistant, because usually that's 100 or more, between 100 and 119. However, with those numbers, I would say she is pre-diabetic or pre-insulin resistant is how I like to call it. I would get her on a blood glucose meter and start measuring her glucose after every meal, the way we teach it in IRSPT, which is 15 minutes after, 15 minutes after that, every 15 minutes for the first hour and a half to two. So you can kind of map it out after she's done that for a few foods. You might see where she has a peak. If it's typically at 45, then you don't have to do all of those tests and figure out what foods are elevating it and get her off of them. And if you're in IRSPT, take her through that process. If you're not, then I would join IRSPT and take her through that process, because you can take her through that and reverse this. Nip it in the bud before it becomes diabetic. And the frequent urination, sure. I mean, that can be a pre-diabetic sign as well. All right. And then we have one more, and then we're going to – oh, two more, and then we're going to go over to see if anybody has their hands up. So Tammy says, what do you think about women – go to Bikram hot yoga often, 5 to 7 times a week. I think the air they breathe is not clean. So what's your take? Well, I mean, I think that Bikram yoga can be very helpful. I think they have to make sure they stay hydrated. And what the air they breathe is not so clean. Why? Because they're breathing other people's sweat. Is that what you're concerned about? Because, I mean, if it's a good, clean yoga studio, they're going to have good circulation. I think Bikram yoga is 5 to 7 times a week is fine, except in people who are extremely adrenal fatigued. And that in that case, it could be problematic. It could be just too much. That excess heat could be too much. Nissa has a client, male, 35, with epilepsy since 13, drinks alcohol and reliant on coffee in the mornings, very stressed, takes sleeping pills and antidepressants. I feel maybe blood sugar imbalanced. I would say most likely is cortisol high. Any ideas with diet and supplements to address seizures, sleep, and stress? Would probiotic help? Thinking of given less than phosphatidylserine and healthy fats. So, yeah, I would say addressing, you know, looking at the adrenals, looking for sure, if he's drinking alcohol and relying on coffee, he's definitely got some adrenal issues because he needs coffee to get started. And the alcohol is definitely going to throw off blood sugar. But here's the thing. Epilepsy has been found to respond really well to a ketogenic diet. Now, not everybody has to go extreme ketogenic diet, but at least moving in the direction of a ketogenic diet, which is very low carb, high fat, moderate protein. And that helps to keep the blood sugar balanced. So I would work blood sugar on this person big time. Sure, probiotics could help. Sure, sleep and stress are going to be that. But I think that really addressing the blood sugar can help with the epilepsy. And you'd want to be looking at the adrenals. You can do some general stuff with the adrenals, but I wouldn't be giving phosphatidylserine unless you saw and did a test to see that his cortisols are high. Because if you do that, you can bring down his cortisols. And if he's already low, he's going to feel more tired. Sounds to me like he's very low in cortisol in the morning. If he's having trouble sleeping, then you can give him phosphatidylserine at bedtime. But again, it's looking at why is he having trouble with sleep. And the stress is big. So I think the alcohol is the biggie that you're going to have to help him work on. And really look into a ketogenic diet for epilepsy. They use it a lot. And it's brain chemistry imbalance. You can look at B vitamins, things like that as well. Ooh, complicated. Okay, I'm going to look to see on the line if anybody has their hand up. And I see Lynn has her hand up. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I just wanted to speak to the vitiligo. My daughter has vitiligo, and from my own research with that, a lot of it's related to anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, adrenal glands are really, and, you know, the digestion and everything that goes along with it. But that was one area that we've definitely worked on with her. And she's also very active in dance and gymnastics. So it was affecting her ankles. Mm. Which, again, is related to that whole kidney adrenal function.
Right.
So I just wanted to share that.
Great. Thank you. Good job. Thank you for that.
Yep.
So who else? Who wants to just say hi and introduce themselves? And then I'll go back to the chat. And I think Janet had a question about a Dutch test, which I haven't seen, so I don't kind of late in the game for me to look at it, and I'm wondering if it's a Dutch test from your daughter, follow-up, in which case I'd love to see it. Yeah, it is your daughter's. Yeah, I don't have it, so if I don't have it, if I didn't get it in advance.
I gave the path to you in the Dropbox in your Skype.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, so Tammy's in CMDS. Yeah, Tammy, it might be good to look at the IRSPT as well. Paulo. Hi, Paulo. Where might I find more about using insurance for lab tests? Clients are beginning to ask. You know, check in with Direct Labs, because Direct Labs can actually send it. I've had people have good results with that. They buy it through Direct Labs, and then Direct Labs sends them a super bill, which they submit. And even I've had Direct Labs submit it a couple of times to, I think it was Blue Cross, and got reimbursement for the client. So that's otherwise they have to go through their MD, in which case they won't. Now, if you're talking some of the more functional lab tests, Genova Diagnostics, I know they do it for sure for Medicare, and I think Blue Cross Blue Shield as well. There may be other companies. They know which ones are going to pay, and they will ask for a specific copay and then do the billing. So you can do that too. Allison, hi, Kilo. Yeah, we'll always get recordings. We record everything, and on these calls, you can usually right after do it. Not having much luck with Pua log out. I wonder who that is. Okay, Good. All right. So I'm going to pull up Janet's Dutch test. For those of you who are in CMDS or IRSPG and don't know what Dutch test is, then I'm going to tell you what that is. It's a test. It's dried urine, comprehensive urine, comprehensive hormone test, something like that is what it stands for. But it's basically this really cool test that gives us all the metabolites of all the different hormones, the adrenal hormones, the melatonin, sex hormones, et cetera. So really good test. So I'm going to open up Lindsay's line. Hi, Lindsay from Montreal.
Hi, Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi.
Hi. So no, I wanted to introduce myself and just tell you how grateful I am for your work and just that I am really, really excited to be here. I've been following you for a while. So I finally took the plunge and, I'm really, really excited. And, on a more personal note, I'm hoping to, my father has been struggling with, he's been to see a whole bunch of specialists and a whole bunch of different naturopaths and different doctors, and they don't know if it's late stage Lyme. Some doctors are saying that it isn't. Some doctors are saying it is, and he's losing the motility and the motor ability in his leg. So it started on his left leg, and it's kind of just slowly creeping over to the right. So I'm hoping that this will give me, I don't know, like a different insight or something to unlock a piece of the puzzle that maybe he hasn't, you know, had a chance to really come across yet.
Yeah, I hope so. And is he open to changing his diet, changing his?
Oh, he's truly the most, him and his partner are the most, he's the healthiest sick person I know. I mean, they make everything from scratch. They don't eat a nut or a grain without soaking it first. He's completely grain free. He's healthy fats. They grow all their own vegetables. I mean, it's crazy, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm curious. Maybe, I don't know. We'll just see. I'm excited to use him as I'm in the digestive mastery clinic. And so I'm excited to, I don't know. I'm excited to take him through those steps. You know,
Yeah, great. You know what I find is that if you just try to label somebody and say, okay, what do I do now? You get locked into a box. So it's really a matter of going systematic, step by step by step. I'm echoing. Step by step by step so that they have the option of being able to, catch whatever might be missed.
Right.
Yeah, really small, subtle thing that makes a huge difference for him. So just take him through the process.
Yeah, I will. So thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Bye, Lindsay. All right. So that was Lindsay, and we have Kiki from New York. Hi, Kiki.
Hi there. How are you? This is so exciting for me to be talking with you live, and the same like the previous caller. I've been following you for a while, and now I'm finally here. And I'm really, really excited.
I'm excited to have you.
Same here. So I'm doing the digestion mastery, and I'm pretty much just at the beginning of it. I'm still finishing IIN, where I'm graduating in November. So I jumped into this at the same time.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm loving everything so far. I was like going through the assessment chart, and like I'm trying to assess myself and just to figure it out, and like it was a bit confusing because sometimes they ask a question like, do you have this, do you have that, like it's a yes or no, but it's like sometimes, occasional, so I'm not sure how accurate like the assessment would come out. What do you suggest?
So most of them do have the ability to do sometimes, frequently, never, occasionally. So,
like on the yes and no, it's more like on the yes and no's.
Because usually the ones that we gave as yes and no's were truly yes and no. Have you had your gallbladder removed? Well, that's not a sometimes, right? That's a yes or a no.
Yeah.
Right. But the things that were symptoms, you have gas and bloating. It was more like frequently and occasionally. So if there's something that's confusing like that, please point it out to us. Maybe type it into the chat, either here or on the Facebook group, because it may be that we missed one question and it was grouped in the wrong way, because we really tried hard to make the questions so that if they were the kind that was a gradient, that you could put your gradient in, and if it was a true yes or no, like have you ever had gallbladder surgery, or had your, you can only have your gallbladder removed once, right? So if you can give me an example of those, we'll help you through that. Yeah.
I guess I have to look through the papers again and clarify. Okay, once again, I'm still just beginning this, so, you know, in the beginning it's all a bit confusing. And it's very interesting because I got diagnosed, like, several months ago with microscopic colitis, which is a lot better now. But now that I'm learning everything and so much, I'm starting to think maybe it's more like pancreatitis. Like, I'm wondering, could it be, like, or if you get diagnosed and it's a sure thing that that's what it is.
Okay, diagnosed, right? You can look at something and you can go to three doctors and have three different diagnoses. So, and because none of us are really textbooks, and our bodies didn't read the textbook first and said, oh, I think we'll have microscopic colitis. Here's the symptoms and the manifest. There's always those gray areas. So you've got to, you know, not knowing the exact symptoms right now, but microscopic colitis is quite different generally than pancreatitis. I mean, microscopic colitis is in the colon. It's an inflammatory disease similar to ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, but it's at a microscopic level. So, yes, it could be a misdiagnosis, right, based on the symptoms and based on the way it presented.
No, but I actually had a test, a colonoscopy.
Oh, he has a colonoscopy and it found microscopic. Well, then pancreatitis is in your pancreas, so they can't see your pancreas from a colonoscopy. So if they actually saw that on a colonoscopy, it's they've seen it. It doesn't mean it's not reversible. It just means that
I don't know if we cover it later on. I don't know if we cover it later
on
in the program or not. I'm not up to there yet. Okay.
Yep. It's much later. It's probably module 10 or something. It's in maybe even later, the inflammatory bowel disease. So we talk about microscopic colitis, we talk about ulcerative colitis, and we have a whole way of approaching it. And it, you know, the approach is not like, okay, this drug goes to this disease, this herb goes to this disease. It's more, you know, it's a process. It's let's understand the underlying pathophysiology that's going on, so that you can make the corrective actions, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to understand myself and to figure things out for myself this way.
Totally great. That's totally great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what I always recommend is do this stuff on yourself. And we've tried to provide, I don't know if you've looked at those yet in the assessments piece, but there's some charts where when you do your assessments, you can use these and you can print multiple copies for all your clients. But you can look at the various, like the scores, if you had a high score on, say, the small intestine pancreas area. And then there'll be across the way the different ways that all the different protocols and all the different, you know, different approaches for balancing that we cover. And then you can cry the intersection. And then there's green meaning, this is really good for this. Red meaning be a little bit careful using this with that condition. So it may say HCL supplementation, for example, is a big red if they have excess stomach acid, right? If they have some other things like that. So you really, you'll learn how to use that. And we go through it in there, but then we go through it in the pulling it all together implementation, I guess, section where I just go back and review everything. So you're going to get a lot of repetition that it just, you know, it sinks in finally. Because the reason I know this stuff so well is because I've been doing it for 25 years, right? Over and over and over again, and you get it. So you're in a great place. Yeah. I think finishing the IIN, you'll have a lot of the practical coaching skills and food skills, and then you're learning how to actually apply it to areas where people have a lot of issues. Yeah. Super.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let me go back. Let's see. And I'm going to one more and then I'll go look at the Duchess. So Paulo says, so-called adrenal fatigue, what is it versus what it isn't? I'm under the impression that the concept's based on pregnenolone and steel, which wasn't based in actuality. Why continue to validate the terms? Yeah, you know, the term adrenal fatigue is more and more being referred to not as adrenal fatigue, but as adrenal dysfunction. So, and in HPA axis dysfunction, so the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid even axis. And it's really, when you look at it, it's an issue of disrupted patterns of cortisol secretion such that the person has got maybe some periods of high and some periods of low. And we see that together. When you call it fatigue, you just naturally think of it as low. And we also refer to like stage one adrenal fatigue, but it's really not stage one adrenal fatigue. It would really be stage one adrenal dysfunction where the person's overproducing cortisol. Hard to call it fatigue when somebody's wired, right? But we also get the people, they're wired and tired because their cortisol secretion is high at certain points and low at other points. So the adrenal gland is actually still functioning. It's just that its pattern is disrupted. And we'll look at this Dutch test in a moment. Lynn, if you could, maybe I should show it on the Zoom. If you could throw the Zoom link into the chat. For those of you on the phone, it doesn't matter. You can't see it anyway. But if you could throw the Zoom link into the chat, don't go there and talk. Just go there and watch because we'll keep you here on this side. I don't want to be managing two different places, but I can actually show the Dutch test and you'll see some of the patterns that we look at. Let me just look at that. And it's in case studies 9-6. Okay, so it's in the case studies 9-6. I'm going to open that file and then I'll go to Zoom and I'll share it on the screen because unfortunately Instant Teleseminar doesn't have a share link. Give me a second.
Which Zoom link are you going to be using?
Oh, that's a good question. let me think what's the best one to use. What is the best one to use? I don't want to use the NEPT one. We don't have one for, give me a second. I'm going to create one and we can just use it.
The only other one I know is the coaching.
No, I'm just going to create one. Because it's probably a good one. Coaching? What's that one? Oh, for private coaching? Home. Let's see. Schedule.
That's the one I use for orientation calls.
Yeah. No, let me do this. This is going to be INE Zoom screen shares. And I'll make it a recurring. And we'll turn off videos for everybody. We'll not do that. No requiring meeting password. Okay, schedule. All right, I'll give you the link in a second. Yeah, and we can just use this whenever we need it. Okay, let me find it. INE Zoom screen share. Here we go. Copy. All right, I'm going to put this in the chat. All right, so yeah, so any time, like if you guys submit stool samples or anything from your person's blood labs or whatever, you can use this link. Let me just, whoops, that's not good. Give me a second. Okay, so if you want to watch the screen share, I'm just going to show a Dutch test. It's great, straight from Paolo's question. And I also think that, you know, for those of you in CMDS, it's not necessarily a gut test, but we know so many things play into the gut. So if you go there, and I'll go there too, start it. Don't turn on your videos. You don't need the audio. You're listening here, so you could just turn off. In fact, I'm going to turn off. I'm muting myself. Yeah, so who's on here? I'm going to just make sure people come in muted. Mute participants on entry. Okay, good. All right. So it looks like Shannon came in and Susan. All right. So I'm going to share my screen. And my screen will be this one, which would be the, yeah, so I'm not going to use any sound from here. I don't want you guys using sound. It's just strictly going to be audio continuing from Instant Teleseminar, and you'll get to see my screen. There you go. Lynn, turn off your audio, your video. There we go. All right. So can you guys see it? Lynn, open up your mic on Instant Teleseminar and let me know.
I can see it.
Okay. I'm hearing. Okay, good. All right. So this is what's called a Dutch test. If Janet's on the phone, can you unmute her so she can chat with me and answer questions? And I'm assuming this is your daughter that we've been, this is a follow-up on her, the one we did back in June or something. So what this basically, this test does is it tests sex hormones and adrenal hormones. And the cool part about it is I like the way it gives the reports because it gives you these little dials and you can see right away where the person is compared to where they should be. And Janet, if you get on the line, it would be helpful so I can, I don't remember. I mean, I saw her test once, but I've seen like 14,000 tests since and I don't remember it. So if we're looking at this, we can just see at a glance that her estrogen's really in a good place. Her progesterone is low, and her testosterone's in a decent place. I'm assuming last menstrual period, so she's a menstruating female. We'd have a different idea if she was postmenopausal. So we get to look here. We get to look at her adrenals. Her first thing in the morning adrenal is a little on the low side. Hers is the red line. Her middle of the day looks pretty good. It's in the upper 75%, which is kind of where I like to see it. She's actually a little high in the afternoon, and then she's good at night. Janet, if you want to comment on how this compares to before, I really honestly don't remember. We're looking at our total free cortisol. It looks at metabolized cortisol, and they're pretty similar. Her DHEA is still in the good range, but it's a little bit on the lower side compared to her cortisol, which means that she's in a state of adrenal dysfunction, right? And you can tell by the chart that her chart isn't quite where it should be. It should really match this line, and it's not. So there's some degree of dysfunction, but we wouldn't call it adrenal fatigue. She only has one that's in the lower end of normal, and she's got one that's in the higher end of normal, but she doesn't have a perfect curve, and her DHEA relative to her cortisol is on the low side. So those are the kind of things we look at. And I'm going to skip that page. I like to just go to the picture page. This is where it goes into the sex hormones. Her progesterone is low. So, and these are the two metabolites that check progesterone. Her testosterone is good, and it's fairly balanced. It's a little... Let's see, idioclonerol. It's fairly balanced. So her testosterone's looking good. Her DHEA is on the low side. We've got her DHEA and DHEAS is on the low side, especially compared to the testosterone. It's almost at the outer limits of there. So there's an imbalance there, and I think that's related to stress. But if we look at her estrogens, it's not enough to just say your estrogen's good. You want to be looking at how does your estrogen compare in ratios. And I don't remember. I know she had some skewed ratios last time, but she still does. She's got more 16 than she should and less 2. So just a quick little summary of this. We go through this in major detail in NEPT in the reproductive module, but we want to have an estrogen metabolite graph that looks like this first one with mostly 70% of the 2-hydroxy, 10% of the 4, and 20% of the 16. The 4 and the 16 tend to be more risky, proliferative, and higher risk of cancer if they're elevated. The 2 tends to be the protective. And these are the metabolites of when you break down the estrogens into their components to be eliminated, these are what's there. lots of things affect these diet, cruciferous vegetables, B vitamins, and genetics. So she's got a higher, she's got a lower, her four is fine, her two is a little bit low. So a lot of times when we see a low ratio of 2 to 16, we look at, you know, potentially iodine as being a good thing to be, that she might be low in. But her estriol actually is, oh, much better than I think hers was way off, but her estriol is the protective estrogen. We want the estriol to be equal to or greater than the sum of the estrone and the estradiol. So she could see she's a little bit off. Her estrogen quotient is less than one. She may still be in need of some extra iodine. And if you look here, her 2-hydroxy is low compared to where we really want it to be. But she is methylating at the same ratio. So her methylation is pretty good as far as this is concerned. And let's see. Melatonin is great, right in the middle of the range. Oxidative stress number is at the high end of the range, so she may have a little bit too much oxidative stress, meaning the need for some antioxidant support. And I'm just doing a quick review of this because I've done this before and I'm not hearing Janet, so I don't know what else to say. So that's what I'm seeing in here. And I don't remember her previous one, Janet, so unless you get on the line and tell me, I can't really say much of anything about how this is gone. So let me see, Janet. Yeah, I don't see her. So that's it. So Janet, you can watch the recording. Hopefully you're on here somewhere. If you want to comment in the chat about where this has gone or what particular questions you had about this, but that's my assessment of it at this point. And like I said, there's no way I'm going to remember her previous one. All right, great. So we'll leave that open in case we have something else we want to look at. And we'll come back here. And I'm doing that quickly. On our NEPT calls, we usually take a lot more time and we do cases and we ask lots of questions. But because this is a mixed program call, most of you are not in a program that, you know, supports the Dutch test, but it's a good thing for you to be exposed to because it's an amazing test that gives you so much information about it. And like I said, we do a lot of that. We do a lot of those. Over the last few weeks, we've probably done half a dozen of them on our NAPT calls. All right, so Kiki, I don't know if I put your hand down or you raised it again, but I'm going to open your line and just find out. Did you have another question or comment, or did I just forget to put your hand down?
I guess you forgot to put my hand down, but since okay. I'm still here and you're still on, I'm wanting to ask you a question. If my 18-year-old constantly has hiccups, like very frequently, do you think that by 18-year-old she could be suffering from GERD? Because I thought that's one of the symptoms, or...
It's possible. I mean, does he have or she have any other symptoms of burning and, you know, bad taste in the mouth, sore throat,
yeah,
or anything like
she
that?
She does frequently, like, request Tums, and I try to talk her out of it, but...
Yeah, so she might very likely have it, absolutely. Hiccups can also be a diaphragm spasm, and cervical spine C3 controls that, so sometimes an adjustment of C3 helps it. But it sounds to me like if she's requesting Tums, then she probably has some GERD going on. So I would go through that part of the module and really look at the demulcents and, you know, other things like that to help soothe it.
Yes. Okay. Very good. We're going to start with my family.
Yeah, that's the hardest place to start, honey, because if you can get them to stop, you're good to go with your clients. Great. Good job.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. So I'm going to go back to Q&A. I'm going to refresh the Q&A. Okay, we have about three more questions. Let's see. Okay, so Tammy, what do you think about the sauna? You can take your head out. All body parts covered. I have a sauna at home, but I do not like my head to get overhauled. Do you have a preference type of sauna to the company? You know, I have one of those kind of portable ones that you stand up, and your head comes out and my hands can come out, so I can actually be watching a video or reading a book or doing other things while I'm in the sauna. So I kind of like them. You can be careful of the quality. I got this from a company that showed at a fair many years ago, and they're higher quality, I think, than the cheap ones on Amazon. But somebody just sent me a link, and I can't remember where I saw it, for a new one that just came out that's a full spectrum one. So a full spectrum portable one that your head can be out of. And I can't remember the name of it, but it looked rather promising. Yeah. So company-wise, I don't know for sure. Abe in South Orange, a friend of mine says since he's gone on a vegan diet, he's noticed a serious loss of enamel on three of his teeth. He thinks it's due to the beans he's eating twice a day. He's not soaking them or sprouting them before cooking. What do you think? Well, you know, certainly it can be an issue. I mean, enamel, usually loss of enamel is a lot of times like when people are taking unbuffered vitamin C, or they're doing a lot of lemon juice without washing after, so you may want to look at that as well. Beans twice a day. If he's not soaking them, they're certainly going to be putting a load on his digestive tract. You can certainly test it out by having him soak them and see, or beans twice a day is a lot of beans. So it could be a digestive issue with the beans. I think a lot of people go with a vegan diet and think they just have to load up on beans. That protein is the main ingredient, and it's really not. We really need to be doing a lot more vegetables, and we don't need as much protein as we think. So I've not heard of beans, unsoaked beans, having an effect on enamel. But there are some anti-nutrients in there that could affect the uptake of minerals. So you might just have him try soaking them before cooking and putting in a piece of kombu while cooking them, because the kombu will impart a lot of minerals into that, into the brew. Yeah. So then he asks if he's calcium deficient, what's the best way to resolve it? So, you know, we really want to look at stomach acid, right? Do you have enough stomach acid to pull out the calcium from the other minerals from the food? So go through the section on stomach acid and see. And like I said, if he soaks the beans and then puts a piece of kombu in, that's going to impart a whole lot more minerals there. Sea vegetables in general can be very useful for getting good levels of the various minerals. So making sure his stomach acid is good, making sure that he's getting plenty of those good sea vegetables, the minerals, and he can certainly take a liquid or powdered version of it. Dr. Emery, okay. Tammy, I would like to know about the upcoming Shine Conference. Is it mostly targeted for health coaches? I'm an acupuncturist, practice functional medicine in Boston. What am I able to gain? Is it different from the retreat you have once or twice a year? I'd like to know what the schedule looks like. I need to arrange airline tickets, et cetera. I sent an email to Lynn. Yeah, so it's not just for health coaches. We have all kinds of practitioners. In fact, we usually get at least a half a dozen or more MDs. We get a lot of nurses. We get acupuncturists. We get physician's assistants. All kinds of practitioners there. And what you're going to learn, you're going to learn a lot. We have speakers. We also have me. We're really taking you through a process of, for this particular one, it's using food as medicine in your clinical practice. So in addition to teaching you various strategies about specific foods for specific issues, we have speakers like Tom O'Brien talking about the foods for autoimmunity, and Annika Becca talking about foods for female hormone balance, and Steph Jackson going into the real details and the nitty-gritty of microbiome and feeding the microbiome and helping people to customize their microbiome. And I'm talking about everything else that everybody else doesn't talk about, but also how do you use this in your clinical practice to increase it. Schedule looks like we start at 9 a.m. on Friday. And we generally go through probably around 5:36. We have a break for dinner. If you're VIP, you get to eat dinner with us. And then we usually have evening sessions on Friday and Saturday evening. They're optional, of course, but they're added to the schedule. And then on Sunday, we usually end right around 5. Okay? And it's a phenomenal conference. If you go to sign up for it, and you sign up on the, if you go to the Shine Facebook page, you can ask people questions about it. People come back year after year, and they get a tremendous amount of it. Is it different from the retreat that I have once or twice a year? So if you're talking about the public retreat we have within our NEPT program, which is once a year, and that's just our coaches and physicians in the NEPT program, and we get together, usually 20 to 40 of us will rent a space, and we go someplace nice, and we really work on our practices and work on improving clinical skills. That's very different from this, very, very different. And then we have in the spring, we usually have a Spring into Vitality conference for our clients, and that's from a client perspective. So the one, the Shine is actually clinical. It's from the perspective of, as a practitioner, improving your clinical skills. We are approved for NANP to get some number, I don't remember how many, continuing ed credits through the National Association of Nutrition Practitioners. And what else can I tell you? We also have some people who come just because they like the food and they like to be around the practitioners and socialize. So lots to gain from it. I hope that answers your question, Tammy. Okay. Yeah, and we have some acupuncturists as well. Okay, so no more there. I'm going to go to chat. What questions did Janet message me? I don't see Janet's questions.
No, she messaged them to me.
Oh, okay. I was going to put them in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
tell me.
She said she was on the phone, but she couldn't get her hand to raise. So
I don't see her on the phone.
I don't either. So I'm not sure. But anyway, she was wondering if there was a need for DIM or something to help adjust the O2 into a better place with the 16 so high.
Yeah, DIM or broccoli sprout powder can be helpful for that as well.
And then she's still on the full adrenal protocol for stage 3 adrenal, and so should she change that or reduce anything on there?
Okay, yeah, let me look back at it. So let me go back to her first page. So she's on, yeah, so I would say she could do a little bit of stage 3 type herbs on waking, but keep them, don't go too high with that. And I wouldn't worry about that afternoon. We can just make it stabilize. I'd have her look at, is she eating a high glycemic lunch that's keeping it high? I'm not really that concerned about that, because it's really, if she was in stage 3 before, she's improved dramatically. So I would back off. If she's on any stage 3 herbs, that might be why her afternoon is high, if she's on the stage 3 herbs in the afternoon. I'd back off the stage 3 herbs and only do maybe a half a dose first thing in the morning.
Okay.
Anything else, Janet? I don't know.
No.
Star 2 raises
your
hand.
That's what I told her. Oh, there she is. She's in
Vancouver. Oh, it's Cardinal Entrix, whatever that is. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I can hear you talking and I can't get through.
That's funny. Well, you didn't show up as Janet. You show up as Cardinal Entrix, whatever that is.
It's so crazy here. We're at the edge of all these wildfires.
Oh, God.
And I'm on and off on the computer. My phone's not working right, but I can hear you. So my question is now, she's still on the pregnenolone, the DHEA, all the high amounts of
I keep her on the DHEA.
C, vitamin D.
Keep her on
okay.
the DHEA. I would say too much DHEA. How many drops of DHEA is she doing?
She's doing 2 twice a day.
Yeah, I think she could stay on that.
Okay, and the pregnenolone is 12 drops 3 times a day.
Yeah, and her progesterone is still really low, so she could stay on the pregnenolone.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
But if she was on any licorice or anything like that, I would take her off of it.
No licorice, because her blood pressure keeps bumping around, and she knows that stress, and we're working with that. But, I just wasn't sure with doing the DIM or the broccoli powder, if that would be helpful. And, yes, she has tremendous. when we do the curve for the cortisol, she was below the low line, IN-15.
Yay. Well, there's a good indication of how this stuff works, right?
Oh, and she will tell you, I can't believe how good I feel. It's just amazing. So she knows that she's doing really well, but she was wondering if some of these things we could reduce a little bit. She travels a lot with her job too, and you know, all the drops and such and the time.
Yeah, I would keep the DHA and pregnenolone just because the progesterone's still low and the DHA is still low. Better, but
right.
It's definitely low. So those are the things I would keep. But if she's on, you know, any other herbs for the adrenal fatigue, you know, she really wouldn't need them if she had any of the stimulating stuff that she was taking. She could get off of that.
Okay. All right. And then she has some digestive trouble, and we're still working with that. And I'm wondering about doing a stool test to check for any of the bugs that might be going on, because she does travel a lot.
Oh, yeah. But, and she had all that diarrhea for so long. I would, for sure. Yeah.
So which one would you do?
I'd do doctor's data.
Okay, doctor's
data. I would do with the Parasite X3, so you get 3 stool samples.
It's okay.
Comprehensive with parasites.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
That's all I need. Thank you. And maybe
wonderful.
Next time our connection will be better.
Yeah. I hope the fires don't get worse. We were out there in Oregon last week. We were at Brighton Bush Hot Springs.
Brighton Bush. Yeah.
And we got our trip got canceled short. We were only there 24 hours and had to leave because of the fires.
Yeah. Well, this daughter, that's here in Washington, lives across on the Washington side, safe from the fire, but the fire jumped the river. It got so hot and burned within miles of their place on the Washington side. It's been out of control on the Oregon side, and so we've been on alert for lots of days, back and forth, moving big things, the perishable, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's starting to settle down today, but everyone's still on that reverse 911 call where they call you and tell you what level you're at. So it's another two.
Scary. I'm scary. So, we got out of there in time because we were there at the gorge, Malmo, I don't know, whatever.
Multnomah Falls.
Yeah, and I heard that it spread out to there.
That is totally engulfed in flames.
Oh, my God. I was just there a few days ago.
Yeah. They tried to dump chemical and water to protect that lodge because it's a historical site. They think they have, but they can't even get back in to see.
Oh, my gosh.
It is so bad. And
it's
gone from 10,000 acres to 42,000 acres right now.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, we're inside breathing shallow and trying to make our devices work.
Oh, my goodness. You have get a mask so you can filter it a little bit. You know, you can even use such a cheap dust mask, but really they have it at Home Depot. They have those masks. You look like a Martian with the little, I would do it.
We do. Yeah, we go out with those on, but hopefully by tomorrow it will settle down some more.
Good.
So.
Okay.
So anyway,
rain your
thank
way.
Thank you for
you're
leading
welcome.
This and helping. So we'll get
you're
on
welcome.
Now.
And thank you for the feedback because I'm really excited that she's doing so much better. That's really awesome. And that's just 2 months, right? Because it was June,
this reading of this one is for the daughter in Alaska.
Oh, it's a different
reading,
daughter.
Yeah, it's a different one. But she says it's incredible. The one here also, we put her on for the Enterobacter. We did, you know, some protocol with the cinnamon, the oregano, and one other herb, 5 days, then off for 2 weeks, 5 days off for 2 weeks, and then on the Enterobacter. And she feels incredible. She feels so much better. In fact, she just got a big promotion in her job and she was well enough to be able to take it.
Yay! Oh,
yes.
I'm so happy for you and your daughters, and you're doing such great work with them. So
well,
keep up the great work.
Thank you. The program works.
I'm excited to hear that. I'm excited to hear it. Well, good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Janet. Good luck with the fires and stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye-bye. All right. I don't see any other hands. Last chance for hands. Star 2 raises them. We'll go to chat and see if there's anything else here. So water filter conversation, and Lynn says she uses the Berkey gravity filter. I've heard that. I've heard that that's a good one. I have an RO system. I've had it in for 20 years since I've been in this house, 19 years, 18 years, something like that. And we use our RO with pre and post, two pre and one post filter. And we also have a whole house filter, which is a carbon filter. It takes most of it out before it actually gets to the drinking state. So all of our showers are chlorine free, et cetera. Findaspring.com, Paulo, that's the best source, right? I wish we had a spring nearby. I know that the closest spring to here is in Arkansas, so it's a good 6 or 8 hour drive away, and you got to go with your bottles and stuff. But if you have diarrhea, oh, somebody said they got diarrhea from a spring, so you got to be careful. You got to be careful. So, okay, good. I don't see any other questions. Let me go check out the Q&A again. Tammy, I could not figure out how to ask a question over the phone. I'd like to call you next time around. So the way you do it, you're on the phone, you go to your keypad, and you do star two. Now, if you're on the web call, it may not be as obvious, but if you go on the web call and you should have this button. Like for me, I see conference. I'm not
I can
sure.
see her on there.
Yeah?
Yeah, Tammy Bilazzo in Lynn, Massachusetts. I can open her line.
Yes, please.
Okay. Hey, Tammy, I opened your line. This is Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, okay. So next time I need to push that
star
that
2
on a keypad.
Star 2. Make sure it's star 2. If it's just two, oh. You can do 2 till the cows come home and I won't see it. Star 2.
Star 2. Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
This is the first time I didn't know how to figure it out. Okay, now I know.
Great.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
I'm the one asking about the Shining Conference because I need to started working on my patients and airline tickets. So.
Great. I hope to meet you there. It's a wonderful opportunity. You know, the content is great. The people are great. The connections that you make are great. And it's people love the conference.
Okay.
And Tony's going to speak. Tony's on the line right now. She's going to speak and Steph's going to speak. So some of our nutritional endocrinology practitioners are going to speak and share cases. We have one really good case. We have a medical doctor who's going to share how she worked with one of our health coaches on the team and worked with an autistic patient. And has been getting really good results. So lots of really good stuff that you're going to get from the conference.
Okay. And I have a very early flight from Boston. And would that be okay to arrive in the morning of a Friday or had to be on the Thursday?
Well, I think that you're going to not be able to make it here very early in the morning. You'll miss the whole first morning because I think you're better off flying on Thursday night.
Thursday night. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Got it. Okay. Thanks
okay.
so much.
You're yep. very Bye. Welcome. Bye.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. I appreciate your comments and your questions, and we're going to call it a day. For those of you CMDS, we will be having a kickoff call. You should have gotten an email yesterday or today about the kickoff call on Monday night. And it's just going to be, it's a bonus call. It's not one of your 3 or 5 or whatever. I think you get 3 extra calls from me. It's not one of those. We're just not going to count it. We're just going to do an orientation and make sure everybody has what they need, answer whatever questions you have so far, give you a lay of the land. It's going to be a good call. So that'll be on Monday, this coming Monday. And then we have a schedule set up and we should have, I think it's up on the site by now, and if not, we'll make sure that it is for the calls over the next coming months. Okay? And any of the bonus calls that are with some of our other practitioners, we're in the process of setting those up and getting them on the calendar. So we spread it out so you've got a good balance of calls and time to study on your own. So thank you all for being here. I'm going to open up the lines so we can all say goodbye to each other. Bye. On the count of three. Bye.
But it was a whole fucking lie.
Okay.
Is there some reason you have?
You can say that. Even Tony said not.